Islamic Perspectives on Judaism and Christianity was the title of a lecture given here in Rome recently at the Pontifical Angelicum University by a top Muslim scholar. Originally from Pakistan but brought up in Scotland, Mona Siddiqui teaches Islamic studies and public understanding at Glasgow University and is a well-known voice for Muslims in the media. During her talk to staff and students organised by the John Paul II Centre for Interreligious Dialogue at the University, Professor Siddiqui discussed the Islamic understanding of scriptures and the divine nature of Jesus, stressing the ways followers of the three Islamic faiths have been profoundly connected over the centuries and forced to find a pluralistic understanding of their theology.
There's lots of theologians in history as well as contemporary theologians who have talked about pluralism in the same way that I'm trying to express today. But I think it's something that has to be said over and over again so the message gets wider and more people understand the implications of this.
Sharing her views with journalists ahead of the lecture, Mona Siddiqui said she's optimistic about the future of interfaith dialogue and believes one of the most important tasks is to communicate the complexities of theology to the ordinary man and woman on the streets of London, Lahore or Los Angeles.
One of the reasons I engage in public life is precisely because I think the public at large in Europe and in America is interested in theology made simple. So how you distill the kind of complexities of theological argument into something that the public can understand. And I think this is a message that needs to be said to the public over and over again.
You come from Pakistan. It's a very difficult country at the moment.
I was born in Pakistan. I was raised in the UK all my life. But I know about the situation of minority religions in Muslim countries. And I think there is a real issue there. And I think the perception for a lot of people is that Muslim communities demand tolerance when they live abroad, but they can't give tolerance. And I think a lot of us are trying to disassociate ourselves from that kind of vision of Islam. So the problem is, you know, some of these messages are very simple messages, but they have to be repeated. And one of these is, how does one give and receive in a spirit of generosity?
Optimistic or pessimistic about the future of the dialogue among religions?
You have to be optimistic because I think in our globalized world where cultures and religions and people are colliding with each other all the time, you have to understand that we are all connected.
Your ideas, you're saying, are not necessarily new, but you are proposing some quite controversial ideas, perhaps, let's say. What kind of reaction do you have from mainstream or traditional Islamic leaders when you talk?
I think there's a lot of people who think that why am I not being more apologetic about Islam and why am I not saying that it's about time other communities tolerated Islamic ideals. My point is not about taking sides on this. I happen to be a Muslim who's grown up in Europe. So my life is all about the interconnectedness of people and different cultures. So for me, it's about how do Muslims see themselves in non-Islamic societies as both minority groups and also what kind of vision do they have for their life as Muslims living in Western countries.
How difficult are these two things to put together, if you like? Some see it as a circle that can't be put into the square.
No, for a lot of people, I think that being Muslim in Europe is just a reality, just a fact, and they don't see a struggle. But there are people who are struggling, and not just Muslims, there are people of all faiths who are struggling with how to express their faith in society. And at the moment, I think the spotlight is on Islam, so we're focusing on Islam.
When you're talking to young people, for example, it's also true that faith is increasingly difficult to talk about in a very secular society like Britain and elsewhere in Europe. How much is that a problem, do you think, not just for Islam, but particularly in your sphere of work?
I think young people are not disassociated from faith. I think they're drawn to faith. But I think they find traditional methods of talking about faith or traditional institutions about faith slightly problematic. So a lot of young people are finding their own spaces about where to have their dialogues, both Muslim and Christian. And so this is why you're finding new organisations and new institutions being set up. And I think older generations have to recognise the traditional ways of talking about faith may seem completely disingenuous to the younger generation.
You're talking about dialogue, interfaith dialogue, as not a necessity, but more of an option or perhaps even a privilege. Doesn't this in some way undermine the efforts of those who are dedicated to this area of work?
For us in the West, where we are not afraid of violence. We're not living in conflict areas. It is a privilege. It's a necessity, it's an ethical necessity for me, but it's not a matter of life and death. But for people who live in conflict zones or people who live in communities that are so close but are at loggerheads with each other, then dialogue has a different dimension to it.
How much do you believe that dialogue can in any way serve the wider causes to try and prevent conflicts, to try and resolve or provide some solutions to situations like the Middle East, for example?
Dialogue on its own can never do what is needed. There always has to be political will and political backing. But leadership has its own voice and its own audience, and leadership in any capacity must struggle to make people understand that what they think, what they say and how they act matters to us all.
You've often heard, of course, said that Muslims don't have easily identifiable leaders necessarily. This is a common criticism, if you like. What's your answer to that?
That's absolutely true. Muslims don't have easily identifiable leaders. It's not a faith that has a tradition of institutional leadership. But that doesn't mean to say that people who have something to say should not be allowed to say it.
What are the most important things, do you think, that we should be looking at in terms of lessons to be learnt from Islam? What do you think are the most important things that Islam can bring to this interfaith dialogue?
I think that Islamic history has been eclipsed by, or the good of Islamic history and the intellectual engagement between different religions has been eclipsed by the events of recent years. And in some ways, it's about the kind of generosity and the intellectual exchange that went on that has to resurface in Europe between all religions.
How do you really remain faithful, the dilemma between remaining faithful to your own religion and being open to other faiths?
I don't have a problem with remaining faithful to. I mean, I think the imperative in my religion is to be open to other faiths. And I think this is a very modern phenomenon that religious institutions feel they have to have exclusivist claims. So for me, it's never been a personal issue.
Thanks there to Mona Siddiqui, Professor of Islamic Studies and Public Understanding at Glasgow University.